Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
Tom, I think this is episode 163.
Hurrah! Are we in the new year?
We are. We're officially in the new year.
I'm still drunk.
Mick's here as well. Mick, are you still drunk?
Hello. Welcome to 2021.
Yeah, 2021.
I've just been drunk for 2 weeks. That's just how it goes, right?
Yep, nice. that's what you got to do. Have you run out of everything and now you're into the sherry?
Still got ham. Oh. Ham. Just keep going. Just keep going until it gets slimy. And then you're all right. Even when it's slimy, it's okay.
Just wash it.
As long as it doesn't. Don't do that.
If it gets slimy, more bread.
Yes,
more let's soak it up. Soak it up. Oh, you guys are thinkers. I absolutely love this.
Do you fuck with nog?
Eggnog? I don't really like eggnog.
Me neither.
No.
I'm allergic to eggs, so I shouldn't anyway. But like,
oh, yeah, right.
What is eggnog? Okay, and this is my complete ignorance about it. I'm putting it out there.
Okay, I haven't had it before, but I think it's alcoholic custard with spices.
Oh, has it got spices in it?
So Christmas. It's almost like mulled wine, but eggy and creamy.
So it's combination of three things I don't care for.
I just think it's very American as well.
Yeah,
not that I'm saying I'm dissing it, but I'm just as a kid in Australia, I've never grown up with it. So
it's something we always saw.
Mm. Yeah, and we don't need a hot beverage at Christmas in summer.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's not really a thing what needs be happening. Mm-hmm. So Mick, you have now been on, this is your third episode in a row.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm like a regular now.
That's right. Whoa. So we did the Christmas play, which was hilarious.
Amazing.
It was so funny. And then the quiz again.
Yep.
If you haven't listened to the quiz in particular, I won't give away who won.
No, you don't want to know who won. It doesn't matter anyway.
It doesn't matter, right. Okay, well, I think we figured out maybe Mick was not victorious. But the scores were all close. They were within a point of each other.
Yeah, and I'm still happy that I got that musical question.
That was good.
Well, two-thirds of
that. That was a really difficult one. Yeah. I was surprised. I was like, oh, no. When we started going around, I was like, oh,
I think this
is all on Mick, this one. This one is all on Mick. You have to do all of the work. But this episode, we're going to take a look at some of the best stuff that we watched last year in 2020. Yep. We did this last year. Well, sorry, you know what I mean. A year ago,
it has been done.
Yeah, it has been done.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
This year, let's kick off with honourable mentions before we get into our top five watches.
That's a great idea.
Ooh. Yeah.
All right, I've put together a bit of a list of here's some things that happened through the year that you might have forgotten. Some finales we've said goodbye to, and these are just things that are important to me, but we've said goodbye to Arrow, Corporate, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Supernatural. We've had season two of Umbrella Academy and The Boys. Mm. Neither of those have made my top five.
Same, actually.
Mm. I've been very impressed with the pivoting that the Impractical Jokers did. Obviously, their show is all about interacting with the public and stuff, and now they are doing a late-night Zoom program. They jump on and they eat meals together and discuss and do
2020
improv.
2020 was about the pivot, right?
It really was about the pivot.
And
pivot.
Zoom.
And Zoom.
Yeah.
Dark Side of the Ring came back and did a two-episode special about what happened with Chris Benoit, which was one of the most arresting things I saw this year.
Mm.
Legends of Tomorrow had a classic episode where they were stuck in various sitcoms from the past, which was absolutely hilarious. Joe Pera had season two.
Oh, that does. You said to me at the beginning of, before we started recording, you said, there's going to be stuff I'll say that you'll say, oh, I can't believe that was this year.
Yep.
That's the first one.
So Joe Pera had season two where we followed his saga of growing a bean arch.
Yeah.
And then he also had a pandemic special called Relaxing Old Footage with Joe Pera where he spliced together old footage of things and talked over the top and it was hugely calming and exactly what we needed.
Love it.
Lego Masters truly blew up this year. Obviously, we've had UK seasons before and one Australian one. We had a second one, which for my money was bigger and better. And then the US version really took off over there. Mm. Season three is happening in Australia soon.
Awesome.
I happen to know they're almost wrapped.
See, Hamish was on the set of Lego Masters during the ARIA Awards. It was a really weird cross promotion.
That is very odd.
Don't even
and why Hamish
that.
Was even on the ARIAs, I don't know. But
because I used to work in radio, I guess.
Hamish is doing a lot of cross promotions at the moment. He's eBay.
That's right.
BAE.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
That's clever.
Yep. So they've got him going there. There was a film called You Cannot Kill David Arquette.
Yes, that's right.
Which, you know, remember where I raved about that? It was him getting back into the world of wrestling because he was a pro wrestler for about 3 weeks in 1999. Mandalorian and Hamilton helped Disney Plus smash their 4-year goal in 11 months.
Yeah, right. That was a pretty low goal, you would think.
Not really. Like 96, I think it was 90 million or 96 million subscribers they hope to have within 4 years, which is a very conservative estimate.
Hmm.
You know, if they'd smashed that in 3 years, you'd be stoked, but they did it in 11 months.
Wow. Yep.
And they've now reset their next goal for, I believe, what was going to be their goal by the end of 2029.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They're hoping to have done by the end of 23.
Well, we're all subscribers, right?
Yeah, I nearly dropped it. But and then Mandalorian came back. Yeah. And then Soul is coming. Oh, it's out.
Soul is out now.
So there's a few more reasons to keep watching.
There's so much more stuff to come.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Amazon Prime had a really strong year as well between, you know, I really enjoyed that show Utopia. And there was also Upload.
That's right.
Upload. Yeah,
I've yet to watch that. I have to do that this January.
I rate that really, really strongly. And Borat 2, which was, you know, such a surprise.
Yeah.
In a year that we had a lot of weird, bad surprises to get a movie filmed in secret like that and only info trickle out days before its release was huge.
Yeah.
So that's some of my honourable mentions for the year.
Okay, so my honourable mention is a game that I had all I was like, all right, for top five – episode, 100% going to finish this game so I can talk about it. I haven't finished it yet. Bastion. So it's a few years. It's a few years old. But I've been playing it in preparation for the next game that's on my Switch that I'm going to play, which is Hades, which was a lot of people's game of the year, made by the same people, Supergiant, I think they're called. Amazing game, but the music's wonderful. And the narration is great. Like you will be, as a character, like a scene opens and you're just lying down and you're like, I guess I'm not doing anything. And the narrator goes, and he continued lying until you move the controller and you start him moving. He's like, and then he shot up and started walking. You're like, oh, he's talking about everything I'm literally doing. Great game. Really, really good game.
Awesome.
And I'm so... If I'd actually finished it, it'd be in my top five, but it's not. One series that I really enjoyed watching, and it feels like I watched it 3 years ago, but I didn't, was on Netflix called White Lines. It was kind of a murder mystery, and it was set in Ibiza.
I love Ibiza. I love saying Ibiza. It's just fun to say.
Ibiza. And it sort of flashes between the... I think it was around 99, 2000, around then.
Peak Ibiza.
That's right. And now, and the murder happened then. And, you know, it's all about...
Is Pete Tong in this movie?
No, it was a series on Netflix. Okay. I don't think so.
So he was a DJ. There was a film called It's All Gone, Pete Tong.
No.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
Paul K.
How long ago was that?
Too
long ago.
I think it was a few years after Kevin and Perry go large in Ibiza.
That's beautiful.
Ibiza has fallen off the map, hasn't it?
Must be.
Imagine not having like Ibiza right now with the pandemic going crazy still.
I believe Idris Elba, he spent a few months over because he does every year.
That he did at Ibiza too.
So he films it. He goes over for Ibiza season every year and DJs.
Yeah, right.
But he was there for a bit and then he's come down under.
Oh.
Of course,
Did you know Manny Jacinto is in Australia at the moment?
No.
From Good Place, Jason.
Are they all doing something together? Or like
he is involved.
Because Mark Wahlberg's here as well.
So Wahlberg's here on a holiday, I understand, and doing an ad for someone, and that's it. But a bunch of people are up doing Nicole Kidman's new TV show. They're all staying up near Byron.
Oh, they certainly are. I mean, I've got some connections with that, and I know where they've been filming the next season of. Tell me what it is. Pretty Little Lies.
Big Little Lies.
It's being filmed up at Byron.
Amazing.
At a location which was undisclosed, of which is a friend of mine's family's house.
No way.
Yeah, so it's pretty big news. I could go and watch from a distance, but it's all very restricted.
Yeah, I bet.
But Nicole basically paid for everybody to come out for that TV show filming. Must have cost crap loads.
Yeah, it must have been a lot.
Which just means they're getting paid crap loads to make this, I guess. But Australia's become like this hub now for creating TV, movies. Yep. It's actually really exciting.
It's worked out really well for us.
Shang-Chi's been filming out Western Sydney.
Yep.
Getting ready to do Thor here next year.
That Rock show.
The Rock, he's filming up in North, Queensland soon, or now. The guy who's playing one of the young Rocks is actually Haole Te Kefu, who is a... DJ from Coolism, an MC, cool. A rapper. It's his nephew. So it's a cool little connection there. And really exciting to see how he goes. And really great Polynesian cast in that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think that show's going to be...
Yeah, I love it. The Rock, eh? Like, how can you not like The Rock?
Yeah.
And buddy, Zac Efron's making a movie for Stan at the moment because he's moved here.
Yeah, he's got a girlfriend here now.
He's dating the girl who served him in a cafe. Yeah.
Is he going to make a movie about that?
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be, right?
But that could be, low budget. Thing. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I watch it for sure. So Mick, what have you got any honourable mentions?
You guys have covered a couple of them. I'm a bit of a late adopter sometimes.
Yeah.
And I remember last year, The Boys was a massive thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I still took me a while to get it. And then season two was coming and all of a sudden everyone's going, season two's coming. I'm going, I haven't watched the first season.
Yeah, holy cow, shit. Let's go.
And, you know, when you see billboards for things, I always think billboards for season two mean that the first season was really good. I'm sold by this sort of advertising. Anyway, everyone told me to watch it. I finally finished season one.
Excellent.
And then started season two. So I haven't quite finished it. It was my plan to get through it this holiday season.
Yeah.
But now I get the hype. I understand why. But my wife doesn't like it because it's so violent and it's so full on.
It is.
And so sometimes she's like working at home because she has been working at home for a long time. And I'll put on The Boys at lunchtime and she's like, no. I said, you haven't got any Zoom meetings. No, it's fine. But then it's always like too loud for her because there's like just so much killing and violence. And
it is a lot.
But I love it. I'm a guy. That's what I like.
It's awesome show.
You're one of the boys.
I'm one of the boys. Mandalore and Malorian 2. I haven't quite got through it all yet. I'm a bit slow on that too. But it's lived up to the hype again. I think the second season has been probably as good as the first season. I know it's better. I think it's good. I don't know how much longer they can go though. I don't know how. Do you reckon? Because it'll sort of get overtaken by the next thing.
Well, they've already announced two spin-off shows from it.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that they'll wrap up that particular storyline in that it's...
Leading to the end.
Well, it's not going to go where we expect. We've been led that he's going to drop him off to go and be a Jedi and stuff, and everything that every other Star Wars movie has taught us is that boy should not be trained how to be a Jedi.
Yes.
That's a very, very bad idea.
Yeah.
So I think they need to reach that conclusion. And maybe then they spin it off and there is a Grogu show or something.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they need to keep that central storyline going.
Mm.
My wife and I really got into this UK detective show about corruption in the police, Line of Duty. And I might have talked about it when I was on before, but we just got obsessed and watched every season. We never do that, but we just went through bang, 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 watched all these old episodes of Line of Duty, and there's a new season coming soon.
Oh, so they're still making it.
Still going. But they all came onto Netflix, like all three seasons at once, even though they've been going for a few years. All about bent coppers and just getting inside. It's a totally different angle, you know, and it's a sort of cop show you wouldn't see Americans make. Like, they just don't really make them this way, but this is just like it gets exciting, like a lot of, you know, twists and big moments. But yeah, really blew me away, that show this year. And one more honorable mention. I didn't put a book in my top five because I don't read that much.
Yeah.
And look, I think I read maybe three books a year. It's pretty bad. But the one that I grabbed hold of me was Flea's autobiography.
Sure.
Now, you'd never think Flea could write this. Well, maybe he didn't write it all. I don't know. Sometimes they get ghostwriters and stuff. But this book just grabbed me. And, you know, Flea was born, he was Australian, right? Like, his name is Michael, which is my name. I actually was in the line behind him once at LAX going into America. And I was so freaked out that he was standing like a meter away from me. I didn't say anything. But he's like one of my idols as a bass player. Like, you know, just, and then I read this book and it cemented for me just how, you know, this guy is a real big figure in my life.
Yeah.
Like, and I always wanted to think, you don't want to believe that your idols are good people, because sometimes they aren't.
They're just assholes. Exactly.
I read Slash's autobiography and he was just a prick. but Flea, he's had some big times. He's gone through drugs and he's at the heart of him. He's just a really good guy.
I feel like he's really positive.
Yeah, he really is.
Did you read Scarface?
Anthony Kiedis.
So you read that one?
Yeah.
How would you, I mean, let's compare them because they're from the same band.
Well, Anthony Kiedis, look, he's a pretty
asshole.
He's pretty out there and his drugs really, really affected him. But yeah, at the core of him, I don't think he's as nice a guy as Flea is, you know? And they were mates, like they were schoolmates, like they were really good. But Flea gets into some honest truths about Anthony Kiedis in the book as well, which I think is good. But yeah, Scar Tissue is still like one of the best selling music autobiographies out there.
At that time it came out, I feel like everybody around me was reading it.
Because it's just, it is, it just puts it all out there, you know? It sort of doesn't hold back, which is interesting because it does portray him in a pretty bad way sometimes. But that's just how, that's what happened, I guess.
But I can't name too many bassists that you would expect to be assholes. If you think about it, they're never the ego driven, you know, they're never in the front of the photo or anything like that. The bassist is there to be reliable, back everyone up and keep it sturdy. Mm. That's their job.
Yes, we are. That's what I'm. Just what I'm doing on the watches. Right. That's why I'm the sturdy
the bass
back.
Player. That's
did you ever play bass, Tom? I do. You do. There
not
we go.
Well, but enough.
There we go. Bass players unite.
Yeah.
Very simple punk stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of Ramones.
No slapping then.
Yeah, I like a bit of slap. Mm. I like a bit. I'm not good at the slap, but I like a bit of slap.
You like the fact that it's a thing that can happen.
Yeah. No, I just like to get all fuzzy and play Ramones and just really simple walking bass lines and stuff.
That's good fun.
All right, let's start a band with two basses.
Yeah, and I'll play the. I haven't played a guitar for a long time.
Oh,
but
you're down with Thundercat, right?
Oh, I love Thundercat. Okay, amazing.
I could play the piano.
All right.
What should we do? Yeah. I'll do both.
Can you sing too? Yeah,
perfect.
We've got it. Could be like Death from Above 1979. Yeah. Two bassists and a pianist who's playing the drums on a sample.
Even better. Let's call. Wait, hang on. Before any of that, who's going to write their first tell all autobiography?
Oh, I'll do an audio book.
Okay, do that one. Perfect. That'll do. As long as you're truthful in it. All right, let's get into our top five.
All right.
Mick, I reckon you go first.
My gosh. Are we doing 1-1-1 like we did last
week? Yeah, I reckon.
And they're not in a hierarchical order. So you're not. You don't need to work to your number one.
No, it's just what's next on your list.
And if you want to bundle a few together, that's all right.
All right. I will be doing that. Are we bundling some at the end? But my first offering in my top five is a show that I was a little late getting into as well, but then I watched this third season this year and I was so frigging hooked and I cannot wait for the next and final season. We're talking about Ozark. I got into this show maybe at the end of the second season and then I smashed through it. And then the third season came out this year and I was just like, I've got to watch this now every week as soon as, you know, straight away. We don't do that very often, but I love getting through it. And it was just a season that it stepped it up as far as the characters go, like Wendy being, what's her name?
Laura
Linney. Yep. She sort of took control of this money laundering business that Jason Bateman and the Birds had been doing. And just it stepped it up the whole level as to where this is going and how deeply entrenched into this narcotic, like, money laundering business is going. I didn't even know what money laundering was until I watched Ozark. And now I'm just like going, I still don't really get it, like, how it works.
But you're recycling that money, right? It's not actually washing it.
Yeah.
As long as you know that.
They do actually wash the money, though. That's the funny thing. They actually put it in dryers to make them look old, like the money to make it look like it's not freshly minted.
I've learned something new.
Yeah.
So that show, I've watched the first season and I have every intention of getting back into it because it's wild. Mm. But it's the kind of show where every episode you're like, they're not going to go there or there's no way they're going to get out of this. Like it keeps pushing the line of there's no going back from this and there is no going back. It's why it's such a good show.
Oh, I
really need to get back into it. Yeah.
And some people don't like it because the characters aren't very likable. There's no one you can really look at and watch the show and go, I like this guy. I want to see what happens to them. But Jason Bateman, like the guy, the funny guy.
Absolutely.
You think of his character in Dodgeball, you know, just this goofy commentator who's just like, I can't remember that classic line he does. Anyway. He wrote.
It's a bold choice, Cotton. Let's see how it works out.
This whole show, I'm just so obsessed. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Sorry, I just tweeted what you said. But you know, this whole show is done by him for him, I'm obsessed with it. And the end of season three, if you haven't seen, I'm not going to spoil it, but it's just like shocking. All of a sudden it's like, okay, what's going to happen? And then they said they weren't going to renew it. Like for a while they were like, oh, that could be it. Well, maybe we're not going to do another season. Everyone was like, what?
Why? Why would you do this? You can't do this to us.
It's going to be another episode of what's a show that wasn't renewed that
Glow.
Was at a, you know, cliffhanger ending. There's been heaps.
Yeah, there's heaps.
Yeah.
Alf.
How did that end?
The government took him and locked him in a Roswell, like he was locked underground.
So and a sad ending.
Yeah, season six was meant to be Willy coming to liberate him break him out.
Really depressing.
And they never got to come back. So yeah, the ending of Alf is him being captured, taken away to be experimented on by the US government.
That's amazing. I should re-continue that at some point. You think they will, won't
they? I hope they do a gritty reboot where what's Alf's mental state after he's been on experimented for 25 years?
They could
puts out a call to Melmac, come fuck over these humans.
Yes. Who would watch Alf now, like a reboot or a remake? Adults.
Everyone.
Make it as dark as because he always had that. There was that
He tried to kill the cats.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, he made murder jokes. Yeah.
It was pretty twisted, yeah.
And I think that's one of our first Alf mentions of this year, so thank you very much.
Of this year? Of 2021.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We always get a few of them in.
Alf's always in my heart. That's why I have to check when you're talking about.
Tom, what's your first of the five? Not number five.
So I'm going to single out a particular episode of a show that you know I adore called What We Do in the Shadows. Oh. It was difficult just to pick one because it was such a strong season. And you think back, you had the crazy council reconvening at the end.
Yep.
You had Colin Robinson getting a promotion and becoming a power junkie.
Yep.
But I have to, and you know where this is going, I have to give it to the episode On the Run where Laszlo, aka Matt Berry, goes undercover as a regular human man bartending here in New Jersey. My name is Jackie Daytona.
I knew it.
And I've rewatched that episode a bunch of times trying to work out whether he's influencing the netball games.
What?
Because we've seen in the past that Laszlo has the ability to move things telekinetically. He can move things around with his mind. And if you watch when he's coaching those netball games, he's intently watching the ball. And his hands seem to flick sometimes.
Right.
So I don't know if he's messing with the game to help him win or not.
See, but I just that's the level. He was really into it.
That's the level this show goes to. If you rewatch these things, you see them influencing stuff in the background all the time, making little jokes in there. But
totally.
Mark Hamill, that was his best appearance this year.
Really,
and he was
really
in some good.
Good
stuff this year, but that moment where he held the pool cue and they went lightsaber, which apparently was unscripted and they just got there in the moment and did that. The fact that Matt Berry didn't break into laughter means he gets one of my top five spots.
He's the man.
Legend.
He's the man. So that show, I feel season one was great and I loved season two, but this season two, they've stepped it up and it's one of the best things being made on television at the moment.
Well, look, I mean, What We Do in the Shadows season two is in my top five.
All right.
For sure. And I agree, the same thing. They took what was gold from season one and they went with that but made it more ridiculous, put the characters in even more uncomfortable, hilarious moments. I mean, Matt Berry, obviously, amazing. But yes. Naja, she was my favorite character of this season.
Colin Robinson has emerged. Like season one, I thought he was funny, but this year he just took that character.
He was given a lot.
And that is a completely original idea. Energy vampire.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a twisted idea, and yet they make that work. And I think for my money, I can't think of another character in a TV show or film this year that had a better arc than Guillermo.
Yeah.
Of accepting his lineage.
Yeah.
I'm dancing around things, but accepting who he is, but only to a point.
Yeah.
And then having a moment with a couple of the different vampires to really solidify the fact that these are his family.
Yes.
And that he can't, he will protect them to the ends of the earth. And that moment where he's standing in that alleyway and they're all inside and they're chained up and he's there to save them and it looks at him and then the camera cuts away for a second and then comes back and he's made it up that wall and he's scrambling over the top. You're like, fuck you,
You touched on Mark Hamill's appearance, but it's so many great, not cameos, actual roles in this by amazing actors and comedians. You're just like, this is, hurry up with the second, third. Third. Give me more.
I'm
give me
so
more.
Happy that Jermaine came for that last episode.
Yeah, me too.
I haven't watched it all yet and I'm catching up on things, but that's awesome to know.
Yeah.
Because I've got a sucker in. It's another one of those ones. I love it. I love the show, movie original. I haven't even watched all of the second season because I have to watch it privately.
Sure.
It's your thing.
It's one of those my things that I watch. But yes, I need things to encourage my other half to watch because she's very picky with what we watch. And sometimes we don't get to watch things together. But she loved the movie and we watched, but she didn't quite get into the series at the beginning of the first season and just couldn't quite grasp the fact that
that's
it was
a shame.
Different people,
that's
different.
So good.
Oh,
yeah.
After loving the movie. So, sure. But I swear she'll. I'm trying to encourage her to keep watching it. Come back in. So I'll get there. Jermaine is a good draw card.
Yeah. Did you see Jermaine, his tweet the other day? So when all that Disney stuff, just before Christmas, all that Disney stuff was coming out, one of the announcements is that Taika is going to direct a Star Wars movie. And so they put that out and 5 seconds later, Taika retweeted it just all caps, "What?" And then Jermaine tweeted, "Bro, you should get a calendar. It seems important to write these things down."
I love their dynamic.
That's
so good.
That's so good. All right. We've all kind of had similar top five mentions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. All right. So four. Let's see what how you go, Mick, with your fourth.
All right. This is a show that's been on Netflix for a few years as well, but the fourth season just came out about a month or so ago. I'm still it's going to get in my top five, even though I haven't finished watching it all yet.
Yeah, right.
Because this show for me is just the cleverest writing. It's weirdly ironic. We're talking about Big Mouth, right?
Oh, yes.
Now, Big
Mouth. I haven't seen this yet.
Oh, Big Mouth is great.
Stepping it up every single season. And I call it ironic because this show addresses so many issues that teenagers go through. But it's not a teenage. It's not a teenage show. It's
interesting.
It's a 18 plus.
It almost feels like you have to have lived that to get the humor they're making about that situation.
Sure, yes. I see what you mean.
Definitely, and you watch it as an adult, and you appreciate what they're going through. And it's not a kids' show by any stretch of the imagination, because it the way it addresses things is full on.
Yeah.
And if kids watch this, like, and I'm sure they do. Like, kids can watch anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're
not going to stop them. But
they
probably
know Netflix.
The makers probably know the kids watch it.
Yeah.
But that's why it's so clever, because they then address issues in the show in a way that, they're making fun of it and, they're being crude as hell.
Mm-mm.
But in the end of the day, they're addressing it in a really sensible way. And
so much so that they've won awards this year for educating youth on STDs and different.
I didn't realize they'd won awards for that.
That's amazing.
Ah, yep. Nick Kroll, the guy, I mean, I've seen him like on a stage just talking in general, and like he's just a very, very clued up guy, and he knows what he's doing. But yeah, this show, this year, this season comes up with the anxiety mosquito, and there's like the hormone monsters, and there's the depression kitty, and now there's the anxiety mosquito, and that's like the feature of this season. I haven't quite watched it all, but you know, it's really addressing the anxiety that kids feel, and when you get to a certain age, you start feeling like you're not sure what's going, where I'm going to be, and It just takes it to the next level.
And I love
that
it's a mosquito, like constantly. Yeah, that's awesome. I need to. This is what happens when we do this. I'm like, I need to watch that.
Well, you've got 40 episodes to watch.
All right. Go on,
Tim. No, it's easy. No, it's easy to watch.
You go through them pretty quickly.
Totally, you go through them really quickly. And I think we've talked about how some animated shows don't work because the animation doesn't quite match the story or whatever. A bit like Hoops didn't quite work out.
Yeah.
Because it just
got cancelled.
Cancelled. Yeah, it's gone. There's another one that's out on Netflix called, it's about a family, quite a poor family in a house. And I can't remember what it's called now. But there's a few animated, and it was okay, and it's still working its way in. But yeah, I always try and catch these new animated shows to see if they work, and a lot of time they just don't. But Big Mouth, straight from the beginning, bang, you just know.
Yeah,
just
the tone was there.
Yeah. It's very, very clever.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Tom?
My number I feel it's appropriate.
The fourth one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Is so comics get re-released all the time with a new rebooted number one when there's a new writer coming in and stuff. So last year there was a huge line-wide complete reboot of the X-Men universe. And by that I mean they killed all the X-Men. And this new writer that's come in, Jonathan Hickman, he's not a new writer, but he's very famous for so a lot of times someone will come onto a comic book and they'll have their first six issues planned out. That's the first book that comes out. Or they might go crazy and have two of those books planned out. That's a full 12 months of planning done and stuff. Jonathan Hickman is known for showing up with a five-year plan.
Wow.
And he says, this is the things I intend to do. And he did a sprawling Avengers story that covered It took about 4 years, three different titles each month, all interlinked, characters crossing over and this sort of stuff. And it ended with the death of everything and a complete reboot of the universe.
Wow.
So he got to take over the X-Men and had – he encouraged all X-Men writers beforehand to kill as many of the X-Men as they wanted.
I love that idea of just saying, all right, just go for it.
Yeah.
Do all the things you always wanted to do.
Sweep everything clean. Amazing.
He's what you'd call a historian, Marvel historian. He pulls characters from the past and stuff, and he goes, oh, I'm going to use that in a completely different setting. So the very first appearance of the second team of X-Men. So that's your first proper appearance of Wolverine as an X-Men, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, Banshee, and Thunderbird. They travel to a mutant island called Caraco and have to save the original X-Men from there. So this guy, Hickman, brings this idea back. And there's one mutant who can talk to anyone and anything. He can understand every language. And no one ever thought of putting this guy who can speak onto the island and get him to talk. And the island agrees to become the home and a capital of a nation of mutants. Right. So no longer are the mutants feared and ostracized. They have their own nation. And on this nation, they start growing stuff and they grow plants that flower, and the flowers can cure all disease. They can quell mental condition, and they can extend the human life.
Whoa.
They need to be taken every month. So all of a sudden, the X-Men, or all mutants, have the most powerful bargaining chip in history and are now a power player. And wow. They step in like a Wakanda or something and say, we're a new nation, you will respect us. The thing I want to talk about specifically is issue number 4. There is a World Trade Organization summit called to discuss what's happening with Caraco. And they extend an invitation to some of the X-Men. We would like it if you would come and parlay and discuss with us. Professor X shows up with Magneto and Apocalypse. So Magneto was the bad guy for X-Men for the first 20 years, and Apocalypse was the worst guy for the 20 years after that.
Yeah, right.
They all now live coexisting peacefully on the island because they're all advancing the mutant cause. So the three of them show up to talk with various representatives from America who may or may not have a SWAT team stationed above intending to come and put a hit on and stuff like that. Mm. And yet this is the tensest thing I have read in years.
Yeah, right.
And it basically is what would happen if a tiny minority suddenly had all the power and turned around and said, hey, white people, we've watched you institutionalize healthcare. We've seen how you've made people into indentured servants and you charge people to be educated. Congratulations, you've educated us how to defeat you. And the humans are like, what do you mean? They're like, well, we're making all this money now, so we're going to buy your banks. And once we've bought your banks, then we can start to buy your media. Once we've bought your media, then we control your politicians. And all those people that have opinions won't have anywhere to talk anymore.
Wow.
And it was the most powerful characters in the X-Men universe using words to completely destroy humanity's self-important view of themselves. And the humans are like, this all sounds like you're declaring war. And they're like, no, we're not declaring war. We declared war months ago. You've pushed us into this corner. You've exterminated millions of our people, and you've taught us how to defeat you. So we're sorry, but you evolve now. And that's the twist at the end of the issue, is them just going, no, it's your turn to evolve. We're the next step. Yeah, get on board or you're done. And that is the grandest summary of what this new X-Men universe has been about, of just, we don't take shit from humans anymore. And they have laws. You do not kill a human.
Yep.
You make more mutants, so they're all having sex. So Jean Grey is now with Wolverine and Cyclops. They got rid of that whole will she, won't she trilogy. And they're all
answer,
just...
The answer was, yes, I will.
So this guy's that nerdy that this issue has the full menu of what they're served at the summit. Every issue has different things. And the Summers family, which is Cyclops, Cable, all these guys, they live on the moon because, of course,
They've
got a house on the moon. And there's a floor plan of what it is. And Jean Grey's room has a door opening to Cyclops on one side and Wolverine on the other. All these cool little things like that. So I cannot recommend this X-Men universe stuff enough. If you already read comics, I promise you're already reading this stuff because it's just the hottest thing out there at the moment.
Wow.
There's now, I think, 9 different series that come out each month that all tie in together. And this one writer is above it all. And so everything connects. Absolutely everything. It's just sprawling.
Oh, you should work in marketing for the X-Men comic because you've just sold that so well.
Thank you.
That is amazing. And, you know, I didn't realize that when they do a reboot like this, they have such a – I mean, it makes sense, I guess, but they just have such a massive plan written down. Is that normal? Like to have
not at all. Normally it would be a 6 to 12 issue plan of I'm going to tell this story and I'm going to make a few little changes
here. And then
you
work it out
later. Without giving too much away, the mutants have – they can't die anymore.
Right.
So they've worked out a way of getting a few mutants to work together with a mutant who can channel everyone's power together.
Whoa.
So they have a guy who – he was a joke character for years. His name is Gold Balls. When he gets stressed, he sweats and tiny little golden balls pop off him. But someone realizes that if they couple his power with someone who can speed up time, then those can be eggs. So they then start incubating with copies of the mutants who've died.
What?
And Professor X is using that Cerebro, that big computer he's got. He's making backups of each mutant mind each week. So if someone dies, he can download them into one of these eggs. They accelerate the growth and the mutant is back within a day.
Wow.
So they have beaten death.
Amazing. I love that.
Look, speaking about beating death, I was going to pick another thing to talk about, but this is too good of a segue. There's a series, a book series, a trilogy actually called Scythe Books. Mm-hmm. And that's right. And I listen to them on Audible. And sometimes when I listen to an audiobook, my mind just
wanders.
Yeah. Mm. All three of these basically kept me focused the whole time.
Must be a good narrator.
It's a good narrator and a really interesting story. So it's set in the future and it is humans have figured out we don't need death anymore. We're all immortal. Science can heal us. Yep. So if you become deadish,
regenerate the cells.
Just regenerate it and they put your memories that they backed up 24 hours ago back into your mind. So you may not remember about...
Forget your death.
Yeah, pretty much. Not everybody does, but yeah, that kind of thing. But they still need to keep the population under control. So they have got this group of humans who are called Scythes and they decide who dies for good.
Yep.
Oh, cool.
And how... And they are respected. They're almost like the Jedis of this world. And they'll go around and you see a scythe and if the scythe walks in here now and they're like, I want to do a podcast, we're like, okay. And you drop everything, you walk out, you let the scythe have whatever they want. And for example, say I'm picked and I have to die forever, not just deadish, die forever. My family then will get 1 year immunity. So they're guaranteed that they will not die within that time. But the whole thing is, so the rest of the world is controlled by basically a cloud, a big giant computer cloud. And it takes care of everything that humans would ever want. It's basically like a god.
Yeah, right.
But 100% real. He can interact with humans. So you've got science and computers, technology controlling the earth for humans and humans controlling the death for humans. But what happens if maybe you think, I know where this is going. The computer's going to go get evil, start killing everyone. No. What if the sides, the Jedis of this world turn?
It's always a war problem, isn't it?
And then really interesting. Trilogy is amazing and I got through them so quickly, well, as quickly as I could listening.
Listen on normal speed or you chuck it up 1.5?
I should have done 1.5. I've never been a 1.5 person.
No, I can't do it.
No, you'd lose the nuance or
We all work in audio. That would be rude.
Yeah. Absolutely. But, yeah, the Scythe trilogy, really good. All if you want something to listen to or read during 2021, crack on into it. Or at least try the first one, see how you feel.
I bet he won't.
I bet he won't either.
I don't read much. I mean, I like the idea of audiobooks, but I listen to podcasts instead.
Yeah, I know. So, I mix it up.
I read comics. It's the same. We all have our different angle we take on it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
You're too busy at shows anyway.
Well, Not, I am, and that's my next thing.
Okay, tell us.
Perfect. I was hoping there'd be some sort of live recommendation here because that's what I know you for.
Well, 2020 was just a bin fire every year for live music, right?
I saw JoJo Siwa earlier this year. That's the concert I went to.
What was that in February or something?
Maybe in January.
Back when everything was normal.
Yep, 16-year-old pop star. That was my musical outing this year.
You're so
lucky. Please redeem it for me.
Well, when everything went to hell, everyone converted to jumping online and just doing things from their bedrooms and whatnot. And I'm not going to talk about that because, to be honest, as an audio guy, watching a concert or a music thing on a screen with really crappy microphones and bad quality cameras, I did it for a little while and then I just went, I can't do this anymore. It's killing me. I'd rather listen to the recording of the music than just watching this really bad Instagram live or whatever.
Yeah. Now, which is a shame.
Yeah.
Real shame, but
it is. But full credit to people like there's a series called Isolate, and Isolate have been doing live gigs, organizing live streaming concerts from the very, very beginning. So they've done like 40 episodes however many, every single week. So really, really impressive that they've kept that going, and all the money that people are sort of donating goes to Support Act. And Support Act is a really great organization that gives money to musicians that are out of work or need a hand, roadies, sound guys, tour everyone who's lost money or hasn't been able to make a living
livelihood,
in the last 9 months or year. They sort of will hand out grants to people to help them out. So they're a really great organization, been going for ages, but this year, obviously, they've really had a big opportunity and they've got a helped out a lot of people. Anyway, fast forward to sort of, June, July in Sydney in particular, we started doing gigs again. But these are all sit-down gigs and very, very polite, very sitting down in your spots. You can't get up and drink. You'd order at the table. They'd come and serve you your drinks. And
which would be fine if you're listening to, I don't know, a jazz concert or an Ella Fitzgerald.
Yeah, and John Lithgow kept running in and saying, no dancing.
Yes.
That's what it felt like all freaking year. If you stood up, even just at the end, I was excited. It's like a great song. Oh, stand up. You'd be people like security guards pointing at you like, brr, brr, brr.
So bizarre.
I didn't get to that many gigs this year, and it's only just recently at the end of the year that they've started allowing dance floors and whatnot. But one of my favorite artists, and I'm wearing a shirt right now which represents this guy, is a Sydney rapper, well known. He's called Earth Boy. This guy started basically Elephant Tracks, and he was a member of The Herd, and he's got a lot of solo albums now, and he's around my age. He's middle-aged, old white rapper now, but he's seen a lot of stuff come and go, and he's a very, very switched-on guy. But he's still making music, which I love that.
Yep.
And every time he does bring out an album or a song, whatever, he's always looking for that new angle, a new direction. He's not,
which is great. He's growing.
He's definitely growing. Anyway, so when he announces a gig, I'm like excited. Okay, yes, it's sit down. Yes, it's spaced out, but he played a gig and he played it at the in Marrickville. There's this venue which is sort of known as like a jazz bar. It's like two floors. It's called Lazy Bones Lounge. It's very chilled out. There's lounges in the back corner and they have like free jazz going on weekends. Anyway, he played it there, really cool venue. And he brought with him a full band. He's got like a sax player who jumped on the trumpet and then on keyboard and then just a full band. Like you don't see it very often with like a hip-hop gig.
Yep.
And just proceeded to blow out this whole room away. A room of only 50 people, mind you. Not many people could fit in there.
Yeah.
And for me, it was going to take something like that for a musical highlight, a live music highlight. I didn't go see the presets sitting down. You could do that.
That doesn't work.
Yes, I got to see Earthboy now sitting down, but it was a chance to see him in a format that maybe, I wouldn't usually have seen.
Yeah, and he may have never gone in that direction if it wasn't for 2020. So you got to take the little wins when you can, and that sounds like a win as an audience member to be able to witness him
definitely
perform like that.
So, the year in music, there's a lot of great highlights over the year and even though it slowed down and releases didn't come out for quite a few months.
People were holding off and they realised,
And then they got to like July and went, well, I've got this music and things aren't going to get better anytime soon. I've got to put it out. So all of a sudden it's just like bang, bang albums. And there's some really amazing music that came out in 2020. And go and check out all the best of lists because, they all do it better than I do. But it's actually going to be a year that I think will be remembered for some of the amazing music that came out.
Agreed.
And even though it reminds us of a bin fire every year, it's just another year in our life, right? But music, yeah. Music is soundtracking everything.
Yeah.
So bring on 2021 and bring on bloody dancing and mosh pits because I can't wait to sweat all over you all. I still like this.
So good.
I need to see Tool or someone.
Well, they were already here. They were in 2020 they came out. And that was a highlight as well, seeing Tool live. I mean, I've seen them before, but, you know, seeing them after so many years of not seeing them.
I was away.
Oh, no.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah. See, that's up there as one of my biggest regrets of the year.
So, yeah. So what are some of the concerts that you had tickets to? What was the biggest concert that you had tickets to that you were most looking forward to going see in 2020 and didn't happen? For me, it was Alanis Morissette.
She was supposed to be coming out for Blues Fest, which was going to be huge and doing this big anniversary tour and stuff, but playing new stuff. Yeah, that would have been great. And Blues Fest, of course, was trying to cling on and keep doing things. Yeah. This year they're going to go ahead with a full Australian lineup because obviously they know they can't get people out. Faith No More was supposed to come out again. I love Faith
No
More.
That'd be good, yeah.
They've now pushed it out to April. Whether that happens or not, I really don't know. They haven't announced anything yet, so we'll wait and see.
Yeah.
Who else? Oh, Lenny Kravitz. I was going to see Lenny Kravitz.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously maybe he'll come back out. I've never seen him live.
I was going to ask because I've never seen him live either, but he's one of those artists that he's just got so many songs that even if you're not a huge fan, you would be able to go and have a great time.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll be able to sing along.
Shay and I were going to see Ariana in LA.
In LA. Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well. 2021 or two. Let's do this.
Hey, let's not wallow in that. Let's have a concert now and let's smoosh a few together like we're in a mosh pit. Yes. If you've got a couple you want to bundle up, I think this is the round for a bit of
bundle.
So I'm going to throw out a few bundles together. Number one, I can't believe it was this year, but the floor is lava.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I really like that show. You know, some people were not on board with that.
No, I know.
And I was really sad because that show was
perfect. So that show and Tiger King had the most perfect timing of any Netflix release that I can imagine. They were just soothing balms for when we were first dealing with isolation. And, but just
very good.
You know, we were dealing with a lot of fear and uncertainty and stuff. Yeah. And The Floor is Lava was the most comfortable, easygoing jacket of a show.
Yeah. Watch these people try and get through.
Yeah,
an obstacle course and pretend that orange water is
Who would have
lava.
Thought that would become the calming influence of 2020?
I know.
It's true, isn't it? Look, yeah.
Another one that did real good things for me was Last One Laughing, which was on Amazon Prime, and that's hosted by Rebel Wilson with the Australian comedians.
Mm. Yep. It was crazy.
Yeah, it surprised me. I knew it would be silly, but when I watched it, it was honestly one of the best things I watched this year.
Amazing.
Loved that. That was great. Babysitter's Club.
Say hello to your friends.
Say hello to your friends. Honestly, one of the best written shows of this year.
Really?
Yep. Because they took the archetypes. So I think I read two of the books when I was young, Babysitter's Club. I read a lot of books and stuff like that. And I was, I want to see what the fuss is about.
They were huge books too.
So you always had, you know, headstrong, bossy Christy.
Yep.
Shy Mary Anne. I always say Mary Jane.
Yeah. What's the matter, Mary Jane?
My daughter's like, it's not Mary Jane. And Lindsay's like, it's definitely not Mary Jane. You've got boy crazy Stacey.
Yep.
And then you've got fashionista
Claudia.
Claudia. And then there's some others that come in.
There are two younger ones who end up being part
but
of
they this. Updated a lot of the storylines for modern years and stuff like that. Yeah. So there's one storyline where Stacey is babysitting a transgendered girl.
Yeah, right.
And the girl has an allergic reaction, has to be rushed to hospital, and no one's answering the phone for Stacey. So she goes to the hospital with the kid and gets in an argument with the doctors because they won't use the correct pronouns.
Mm.
I was like, these are 12-year-old girls.
Yeah.
You know, it was awesome. This show was great. And Alicia Silverstone played Christy's mum.
Yeah,
Mark Evan Jackson from Good Place plays Mary Ann's father, and a very effective role. Mary Ann's mother died many years ago and stuff like that. So
I think
it's
the same in the books.
He's a very awkward single father, and he goes through quite a character growth throughout the series. Yeah, big time. This show was really good. And I've let Shay rewatch it a bunch of times. I'm happy to have it on in the background, which does not fly with any of her other shows. I get pretty annoyed with them and stuff.
Yep.
But Babysitter's Club really, really brought it.
Awesome.
And then the last one in my bundle is going to be, because after this we still get two, correct?
Yep.
Oh, then I have to shove two more in my bundle. Oh, no. No. All right. Well, I'm doing it. One is Palm Springs, which is a – we've talked about this at length, but it's on Amazon Prime. Stars Andy Samberg from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes. From all of the things that Andy Samberg has been in.
And this film is Groundhog Day, but if he was a nihilist.
Wow.
So the film begins and Andy Samberg's character has already been stuck in the loop for more than 40 years.
That is
so it's kind of
depressing.
Like we're watching part two of the film and it's – I don't want to give things away, but someone else gets mixed up in the loop and
I've
it's –
I've got to see this. Yeah, I have not heard of this.
It's,
sounds amazing.
It's
on Amazon.
Okay.
It's just like Groundhog Day but completely different in that Samberg doesn't – he's not trying to break out anymore.
He's given up.
He's given up. He's accepted
his
lot.
This is his life.
Yeah. And watching that loop and so it blew me away. Way better than I was expecting.
Well, I never expected that Bill Murray could escape that loop just by being nice. I mean,
and that's a huge point of the film.
Perfect.
That's some absolute bullshit. Perfect. And look, the last one that from my bundle is The Good Place finale.
Yeah.
Season 4 of Good Place wrapped up.
That feels like a lifetime ago.
So I've gone back and rewatched all of Good Place this year. There with Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Community of just a feel-good
show.
And that's wow, that is an effective ending. It ends on such a beautiful note.
Yeah,
it fills
it does.
You with hope.
Yeah. It feels like a proper ending. Yeah.
I'm sad that show won't be back in January.
Me too. Okay, so my number three, which is the third one that I'm talking about, we've already touched on it, but The Mandalorian, and I wanted to explain why, apart from the fact that it's a great show.
Yes.
It makes me feel like I'm a kid watching it.
Yeah.
And I've thought about it and I've got this memory and I think I would have been maybe seven-ish, something like that, and I remember loving Star Wars as a kid, loving Star Wars. And I remember thinking, so they've made 3 Star Wars, so they'll make more. They might make up to 10 and that would be really good. And I'll enjoy every single one of them. And then, of course, nothing was made till the prequels and they weren't that good. And then we've gotten the movies. But now suddenly with The Mandalorian, I feel like I'm watching that show as that seven-year-old. The music is great. That music, sit there, I do not skip any of that music. I watch all the credits because I want to hear that. And each episode is its own thing, but it carries on. And I think it somehow in The Mandalorian, they have managed to keep that feeling that we all had when we were watching Star Wars as kids. That hope, that excitement, that I want to be in this world. Let me help. I'll go hang out with Grogu, all that kind of thing. And that's the magic that the last 3 movies have not managed to maintain.
Can I give 2 reasons why I reckon that's a big part?
Go.
One, at every step they keep it simple. And number 2, there's no exposition. They don't explain things. There's no midichlorians. These people don't know about the Jedi, therefore no one knows about the Jedi. And I think that's a huge part because so much of the movies were bending over backwards to make sure that addressed that thing. You remember that line from 22 years ago you loved? Here's an explanation why. There's none of that.
Yeah, held on to it. It's not tied to Skywalker stuff, is it really?
No, there's been, where are you up to?
About third episode into second season.
There's no mention as to what happened in the film, as to why that film character is back.
Mm.
There's none. It's just if you know, and if you don't, just be happy.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have to know. Yeah,
you can watch it on any level.
Which
is
so introductory.
Which I think pleases the Star Wars hectic fans, but also the people who aren't.
It sort of
meets in the middle and goes, we accept it. And
yep.
It doesn't matter if you are a massive Star Wars fan or not. I think that was the danger at the start, was they could have really,
big fans.
Yeah, yeah. And it took a little while for people to realize that you didn't have to be a super Star Wars fan to love it. So, it's worked. I think it's worked. I love your explanation because Star Wars for me was just such a huge part of growing up.
Yeah.
For me, I just expected 3 movies and that was it. I'd never expected they would do any more because they said it was a trilogy.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a trilogy, there's 3 movies. And then when you're just accept it when you're a kid, you're just like, I guess that's it,
Yeah.
Yep.
So when they announced more, I was sort of like, oh. Yeah. They're doing more. But it's
I'm excited.
I was excited, but then I was disappointed. And I was excited again.
And
I was
excited, disappointed.
But I think they've now worked it out and it's taken them a while. But
yeah, I know.
I love that.
It's amazing amazing that Star Wars fans are so forgiving that they can keep going. Try that.
They are anything but resilient, the old Star Wars fans.
Absolutely.
And I am, like I always have been, but I think it got just dulled over the years just with the barrage.
Too much.
Yeah.
And now they're going to give us a whole heap more, but I think they've got – they'll use the Mandalorian template.
I think they're going to realize as well, and this is a knock both on Marvel and Star Wars, that Marvel has kind of replaced the event film, and Star Wars could really slot into the expanded universe of shows. And I think that's
– Yep.
Stop trying to make a Christmas movie for Star Wars every year and stuff like that. That's not a thing.
It's not – and yeah, it's not what it is now. It could be again soon. We don't know, but not for now. Yeah. All right. We've got two each.
Two
All
each.
Right, go.
Are you bundling? No, you've bundled.
Oh, I sort of bundled the music. No, that was Earth Boy.
Okay.
Okay. This is my bundle.
All right.
And look, 2020 movies got pushback, and we named how many got pushback in the quiz already because
that's right.
You know, and obviously still America is just not going to cinemas, and they're not going to, and it's going to be weird. Awards season next year, this year.
Very much so.
The Globes and the Oscars. Like, it's like a quarter of the films that might have been up contention are not going to be there. Or
Absolutely.
Half. I don't even know.
All the films that are normally the Oscar season bait got cancelled. So yeah, there's a very good chance that Sonic is getting nominated for Best Film. Seriously, Robert Downey Jr. might get nominated for Doolittle.
I would.
This is
so
the year for all those
the
small Razzies. Actors and people who don't usually get a chance. They're going to get nommed for these movies that they just went, oh, what?
I'd forgotten I made that.
I was that desperate for new films this year. I watched a film called Butt Boy.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Remember you talking about
that. Yeah, we're not going to talk
Nick,
about that.
Okay, we won't talk about that. My point being,
because
so many movies did not happen, 2020 was the year of the documentary.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And documentaries really went out and just went, we're going to put these up. We're going to put them wherever. It doesn't even have to be at the cinema.
Yep.
Australia did have some cinemas open, so you got the opportunity there, but they're popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
And I saw that more documentaries in 2020, I reckon, than I've seen in like the last 5 years. And I'm going to go through a few of them because I just think they all deserve a bit of a mention. One of them was a film that I saw just a couple of weeks ago, and there's a couple of music ones in here. Yeah, excuse me.
Of course, yeah.
The Bee Gees. Documentary is directed by Frank Marshall.
No,
who you know, Spielberg teamed up producer, like, you know. Spielberg has always wanted to make a Bee Gees documentary.
Has he really?
And over and over again, Barry Gibb has said no. You know, Barry Gibb saying no to Spielberg basically from making a film about him. But somehow Frank Marshall is mates with Barry and they got talking and Barry goes, all right, you can make a documentary about the Bee Gees.
Because he's the last Bee Gee, right?
He's the last brother alive. Mm. So this film has all the backing of Barry Gibb, had all the music in it, and it just traverses all the way back from Australia all the way to the disco era. And it's such a well-constructed movie about a band that I think it's underrated, but it's also gone through a lot of different periods. You know, they started out being like singer-songwriter, three brothers, like singing like almost country songs. And then they discovered the disco thing and how massive that was in the late 70s. It just brought them back. But just really, really well done. The music's amazing, of course. And Barry Gibb is interviewed in it and he talks in it.
Awesome.
And he says at the very beginning, he says, this is my point of view because I'm here.
Yep.
If Robin or Maurice had their own chance to talk about it at this point, you know, this could be theirs as well. But he didn't want to claim that this was the Bee Gees according to the Bee Gees. It was according to Barry Gibb. So yeah, it was well done.
Did they address the other brother whose name Rob? I can't remember. Not Robin.
Andy.
Yeah.
And they very much covered Andy. It's a very sad story. Actually.
Yeah.
Andy Gibb was the younger brother of the three. He wasn't actually in the Bee Gees until 1988. And then he died like 6 months later. It was 30 years old. He's actually has a bit of a feature in the doco. So, really well done. And people have complained that this doesn't cover Australia much, but they actually weren't in Australia that long.
Yeah.
They bailed and went straight to England as soon as they got a whiff of getting a bit of popularity because of the Beatles.
Obviously made the right move.
Yeah. Well, definitely.
Yeah.
So that was one documentary that blew me away. When I was last on, we talked about My Octopus Teacher, which another thing, a documentary that really
that was a very successful one for 2020.
Just really well filmed. Again, I think it was a good timing thing. It came on when we're all stuck in lockdown and it was just like, oh, this is nice. And nature, watching octopuses and people get together. David Attenborough also brought out an amazing mini movie this year called A Life on Our Planet, which is crushing. Like,
I realize I could. Every time I go to watch one of those, I start watching and then I go, oh, that's right. They show the good bit and then they show the bad bit.
Yeah. Oh, you can't not cry. I mean, it's like this is what's happening to this planet and, you know, from a guy that has seen it all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's going to have – he's got many opuses, David Attenborough.
Oh, yeah.
But this is just another one to add to the pile, but it's really, really powerful stuff. Another one I saw at the cinema, music related, was American Utopia. This is David Byrne's Talking Heads extravaganza.
Yeah, right.
Is this the live show adaptation?
Exactly. Yeah. Spike Lee directed it. Mm. It's Spike Lee joint. He basically pops up a crap load of cameras into a theater in New York during this run of American Utopia, and it's friggin' joyful. It is just so, so good. If anyone doesn't quite get it, it's everyone's on stage. All the musicians are on stage. There are no wires. There are no... There's nothing else on stage to look at except for the musicians and David Byrne. Hmm. And the musicians come and go through this like sort of like a metal curtain that comes around the outside. And, and so they're all sort of boxed in. Wow. That's it. That's the stage. And David Byrne narrates his way through it. He talks a little bit in between songs. It's not – it's really just a concert, but it's just more than that. Like it's just like a journey through a catalogue of music and just the way – the musicians choreograph on stage, and it's just beautifully done by Spike Lee. It blew me away. I was not expecting it to be that good, and I'm so bummed that I haven't seen it live. I think they did do it in Sydney a couple of years ago.
Did you ever see them live?
No, I haven't seen them live. So, you know, I hope they bring it back, and maybe they will after this movie.
But
movie just, it's actually been in the top like 10 lists of movies for like 2020.
And that's
like,
really cool.
It's not actually a movie, it's the concert, but it's just really well done. And Spike Lee, obviously, anything he touches, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And the last one in that little documentary list I've got here is a Romanian film. It's about a fire in a rock and roll nightclub in 2015 called Collective. And this fire basically killed about 16 people. Mm. But over the coming weeks and months, another 20-odd died because of infections in the hospitals. Now, you think you go to hospital, you have an infection, deal with it. This exposed the completely corrupt healthcare system in Romania, sort of a carry-on from the communist regime as well. But basically, it took a bunch of journalists and a journalist from a sports newspaper to go and investigate the hospitals, why these people died.
Sports newspaper.
Yeah, sports journalist.
Yeah, right.
And this documentary basically follows him exposing corrupt politicians and ministers and health professionals. And it's unbelievable. Like, it actually shows how a country can get to that point. And you think of people like countries like America where the healthcare system is rubbish, right? Yep. And it is probably corrupt. But Romania had gone to the next level in that the healthcare system, they were all just skimming money off every little bit, that the disinfectant they were using to treat the infections had been diluted to save money. And that's why these people were dying. So not only was the fire exposed a whole bunch of, you know, really bad policies around fire escapes and all that sort of stuff, but it just exposed his health. And it changed everything. Like, the Prime Minister resigned. Like, there was massive protests. This all happened, like, you know, quite a few years ago. This documentary is top-notch.
What's it called again?
Collective, without an E on the end. The Collective is the name of the club that it was based in. It's got an E on the end for the movie. So it's Collective. It's a Romanian subtitle.
That sounds interesting.
Look it up. Like, I think it's done, did all the film festivals in sort of late 2019, but it sort of came out with general release, and you can get it, stream it on for the last month or so.
Amazing. I'm going to check that one out for sure.
Yeah.
Tom, what's your
second to last
penultimate.
I love the penultimate. We didn't even get to bust out an antipenultimate.
No.
I can't even say it out loud.
You shouldn't have to.
Number two, featured on my list last year and gets a plug in again this year, is Harley Quinn animated series. Series two of that. So series one blew me away last year, and it was all about the effects of being in an abusive relationship and finding oneself again when moving on. And then season one ends with Harley winning and becoming the new queen of Gotham and accidentally bringing about the apocalypse. And season two is about kind of survivor's guilt and what happens if you reach for that brass ring and you grab it and it doesn't satisfy you
it's
at all?
It's not everything.
It's not what you wanted.
Yeah.
So it's this huge reassessment of personal priority. She has a sexual awakening of nothing to do with the Joker in just a fantastically told story with Poison Ivy.
Yeah, right.
This show was – so it's clearly a show for adults because it's R-rated and, you know, like the boys, very violent swearing and this sort of stuff. But it had more heart in it than anything else I've seen this year. Mm-hmm. And just a lot of the storylines just really stuck with me. And, you know, massive swerves. So they have a character called Kite Man. He wears a kite.
Whoa.
His whole deal is Kite Man. Hell yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he's in love with Poison Ivy.
Be like, America, fuck yeah.
Very much so. But he's in a long-term relationship with Poison Ivy. And Poison Ivy is starting a relationship with Harley. And the way they play it, they don't portray him as a bumbling incel. And he's not angry about this situation. And he kind of becomes almost supportive of the fact that the woman he loves, her love is branching in a different direction. Or, you know,
Oh, good one.
Thanks. But I don't know. It's just even these tiny, minor characters, like Jason Alexander plays a...
Really?
Yeah, he plays a geriatric cyborg.
Wow.
His name is Cyborg Man.
Oh, amazing.
They're really trying hard with their superhero name.
Oh, it's good. Well, yeah,
they're going for it.
But he gets a wonderful storyline about, you know, what's it like to be over your peak and you know you have no good stories left. How do you find a way to insert yourself in someone else's story and still add things? I don't know, just way more intellectual than a silly show about the Joker's ex-girlfriend has any right being. So I was thrilled when they announced that season 3 is going to happen. It's going to be quite a while until it does come along.
But
and who knows where it's going to be, because the DC Universe app will be dead by then and probably be part of HBO Max.
Yeah, probably. Oh, yeah, they'll probably.
I'm dying for that show to come back.
You'll have to do another rewatch of them.
Yeah.
For me, it's season 4 of Fargo.
Ooh.
I really like Fargo.
Yes.
I was going to say that show, but it's different almost every time. And have you watched it, Mick?
Oh, not since the first season.
So the first season very much tied in or felt like it was the movie,
was very similar. And that's actually probably what turned me away from it. I was just like, oh, it's just like the movie.
Yeah, just like the movie. You know. I've already seen this, but with like an Oscar-winning actress. So the second season was very different, set I think in the late 70s, maybe early 80s. It was wild. It was crazy. Well, as you can imagine. Season 3, I enjoyed. Wasn't as good as season 2. Season 4, really good. This is the one where Chris Rock is in it, playing a very serious character. He is the boss of, mobster group. Let's call it that, a mobster syndicate
gang.
Kind of gang. Yeah, that's right. That's there. And then on the opposite side, you've got
faction.
Schwartzman.
Jason Schwartzman. Schwartzman.
Schwartzman.
Yeah.
That's a bad heap superhero name too.
Black man.
That's right. So I finished watching it and it's got a really nice tie-in to one of the other seasons.
Ah.
Which took me by surprise totally.
Mm-hmm. Does Kirsten Dunst show up?
No, but I wish she had. Honestly,
that was me just having a punt as to what could be the hook. Was there a third Ewan?
That's right. Ewan McGregor played his own brother. He played twins.
Amazing.
In season 3. Yeah. But season 4 is set in the 50s.
I've got to go back and watch them all though, right? Because it sounds like you've got to know.
Watch season 2.
Okay.
And season 3 and season 4. If you don't want to watch season 1, but I would say watch season 2 and 4 because they're my favourites.
All right.
they're my favourites. And I think there's 10 episodes in each. So doesn't take forever. Maybe 11. I can't remember. But, yeah, it was on SBS, so I was just watching it every single week. I like watching things.
It always draws my eye and I always think, oh, I've got to watch. I feel like it's still going. Like if a series is still going and it's obviously going well, you think, well, there's something there that's worth watching, right? So,
and with that one, you really can dip in and out of which season you want to watch because apart from a tiny little fan service link, they're all different seasons. They're all completely different, set different people, different times. Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. All right, here we go. This is the last one.
The last one for me sort of a lot ties into what Tom was saying before about feel-good shows for the apocalypse.
Yes.
Which should be a streaming channel. I don't know.
people would buy that.
And I'm so happy for these guys because they've been plugging away at it for so many years. And it's just, you got to watch it. And it sells Australia perfectly. It's Arnie Donner's Big Old House of Fun.
That's my number one too.
Are you serious? Yep. Oh, my God. Awesome.
There we go.
High five.
That is a great show.
Well deserved.
It's not even like, it doesn't have to be in order and we're not doing number one.
No, but it is the best thing that happened this year.
It is amazing. It is so good.
I've rewatched it.
Yeah.
I think I'm up to 9 full viewings now.
Yeah, the last time I asked you, you were at 7. So
I watched the first episode a million times because I've been showing people. It's like, watch the first
episode.
Everything's
a drum. Everything's a drum.
And these guys, just having watched them over the years evolve, and they used to be like 4 people and 5 people. They're down to the trio, core trio now.
But the other 3 are still in.
Oh, they're still around.
Yeah, the composer, the director, and the editor.
Oh, right.
Are technically part of Arnie Donner.
Oh, there you go.
The composer appears for one shot in the game show when he's being Grant.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Will your boy be well enough to travel to Hawaii? sketch comedy is hit and miss, right? Like,
absolutely.
It's not always
it can be cringy,
hit.
But this is not.
That's part of the joy of sketch comedy. And it does miss. Like, it doesn't always hit. And you don't expect it to because sketch comedy, it's scattergun approach sometimes.
You move on and get to the next joke.
But it's so quick. You go bang, bang, bang. You get into the next one. You get to the next one. And they always shine when they're doing like – And the best thing about Arnie Donner is they just escalate it
and escalate it
until you're just so silly. You just go, how did they get to this
like
point?
Like that Ellen DeGeneres thing.
Oh, my God, it's the best. I mean, that was a tie-in. They used to do that as a live show thing. They tied it into the show.
Yeah, I can see how that would work.
They break the format in a different way each episode. Like, that's where I'm at with things now. I'm watching for all this and, like, I'm past the point. Like, Broden waves goodbye when he's disappearing to go and play a different character in the background of most shots and things like he can't control himself. There's all these things hidden in there. But, they just find a different way to break the format, and then wherever you think they're going to go with that direction, they purposely torpedo that and go a different one. Who knew that we needed Egg Helms in our life?
I love that. And I also love that he changed all of his social media accounts to that. I was like, this is I love it.
I'll be honest, the joke that makes me laugh hardest in the entire thing is in episode 2. Now, Weird Al pops up in the show a bit, but he's mainly in episode 5. In episode 2, halfway through a skit for no reason, it suddenly turns into the footy show, and it's in a green room, and like Weird Al's getting ready. He's got a cup of coffee in front of him.
Yeah.
He says, and the voiceover goes, "Come up on the show next week. Make sure you tune in the new time at 10:25. We've got Weird Al," and Weird Al just goes, "Weird Al is not in episode 3, and the show's streaming on Netflix, so they don't need to talk about it. There is no reason at all for this footy show grab to exist." There's competitions to win 420 pies. They a shout out to Crazy John's mobile phone warehouse. All these really deep. There's a point where Mark gets surprised. Oh, hoodoo gurus.
I remember that.
There's no explanation for American friends.
Well, I mean, I know it's been trying to look at it from an America's perspective, but it's had some really great reviews in America.
It has.
And it's been, it's like top 10 in the UK, which we sort of expect, but USA is harder not to crack.
Mm.
But they're supporting it. They're going, this is great. These are crazy Australians.
Well, behind the scenes, it has absolute Hollywood royalty, like comedy royalty. Mm. You've got the executive producer is Scott Aukerman, who was one of the main guys on the Mr. Show with Bob and David, where Bob Odenkirk got his start and stuff. And that was one of the first sketch shows where all the sketches tied together. You had to tell a narrative that went the entire episode, and that's what he's brought into them. And then you've got there's just so many cool people behind. Weird Al championed their music and convinced other people to get involved.
So good. I'm so glad that was in your list as well. I was wondering how it would go, but...
I didn't bother because I knew it was going to be his. But I agree. Did either of you watch Glow?
Yeah, I gave up this last season.
Did you keep up?
Yeah.
Okay, because you saw that there was a pretty major cameo of one
Awesome Kong.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was like, is that – it is.
Remember there's the large African-American woman who bursts in the room. Who said that they could beat me at wrestling? And they're like, no one said that.
And I enjoyed that, the fact that there was a little like Netflix tie in there.
And Homelander was really good.
That's right.
So Jack Quaid from The Boys.
Yes.
So he's Dennis Quaid's son with Meg Ryan.
Yes.
He is obsessed with them.
Oh, all right.
So he has written a theme song for Mark's private Twitch channel. He jumps on Twitch with Mark every second week, and this he's obsessed. So he's one of when they do the old timey basketball games.
Yeah. Yep.
He's one of he's the main character in that under a big handlebar mustache, and he introduced Auntie Donna to the boys, like to the got them playing it on the set and stuff, and they're obsessed with the pud. They constantly talk about pud.
Just a bit of pud. A bit of Christmas pud.
Just a bit of
pud.
So yeah, apparently it's like that's awesome. That's their most used catchphrase on behind the scenes on the boys.
That's
just a little
amazing. I love it.
This sort of stuff. So it's beloved over there.
Yeah, great.
And then
great.
Yeah, Egg Helms stepping in at the last moment really helped push them up to. It hit at the right time.
Yep.
Mm. I can't believe that they kept it quiet and secret for 2 years.
I know. Unbelievable.
So impressive.
And, like I still can't quite understand why it was kept so secret, but. You know, what was the reasoning behind that? Because usually things are known, right?
Mm. It's got to be the opening of the present. I think it's two reasons. Mm. One, it's the opening of that. Like there's all of a sudden these guys that make YouTube videos have a globally seen Netflix show. The other thing I think is they're so easily and readily accessible. Mm. If you want to talk to them, you can get in touch with them really easy. They're posting videos every day on their social media channels. Mm. They did a promo with Domino's at the moment. They've got all this stuff going on and they're taking the piss out of all of it, but you can always get access to them. So for them to keep something quiet and secretive for 2 years.
That's bloody impressive.
I'll tell you what, their Reddit was very excited. If you want to see an obsessed group, go and check out their Reddit.
Yeah, right. Okay, I'm going to.
For
I love
years.
A good subreddit.
One of the strongest reactions I've seen on Reddit is when the boys revealed that Cowdoy was a character in the TV show, because Cowdoy's popped up a few times in the past in their videos and podcasts and stuff, and they don't particularly care for Cowdoy, but their audience fucking loves Cowdoy.
Yeah, every time he appears, it's
Cowdoy.
Love it.
So my number one is Hamilton, because it was a musical that we all knew about. I wasn't that interested in it. My friends kept saying, do you want to come over? Can we come over and watch it? Because they didn't have Disney Plus. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then we all kind of sat down and we went, listen, if it's not interesting.
We can bail.
We can just bail. It'll be fine. We all sat there and we watched the whole entire thing. Mm-hmm. And when the Spotify list came up, it was Hamilton for me, my 2020. Yeah.
You just had it on repeat?
Yeah, I must have just had it on repeat. And
can you sing a few bit? You know the raps. Can you
raps! I actually got out some of the lyrics.
You're not throwing away my shot.
I love the fact the first time anybody had ever heard any of Hamilton, the Obamas were in an audience. Yeah. I think it might have been at the White House, and he stood on stage with just him and a piano player, which was his co-writer, I believe. And he goes, how does a bastard orphan son of a whore, in front of all of these people who are like dignitaries, and they're like, ha, 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 fuck, this is going to be a comedy. And then by the time he finished the opening, which was explaining who Alexander Hamilton is, the whole audience was just like, wow.
Mm.
And the fact that he managed to make a whole entire rap musical, I mean, it does tie a lot of actual musical themes into it. But he got that so that it was the hottest ticket for years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Apparently every night a different celebrity was going to see it. Like Obama, the Obamas watched it many, many times live. And then for it to somehow translate on my television at home, that's impressive. Because I don't think musicals usually work that well, like a live filming of it. But it did, and I'm excited to see it live. I'm gonna see it live this year.
You got your tickets?
Yeah, I got my tickets.
I've been holding off because I want to see it live, right? I think it's great, I love the idea, I really want to see it, and I like musicals, but I want to see it live in my face, in front of me for the first time.
I think that's the best
just
way.
Get that impact. So I've been holding off watching the Disney episode. I'm sure I'll watch it after.
I think that's the best way to do it for that reason, and also so that you're not comparing the people on stage with the original cast who have gone on to a lot of different interesting roles in TV movies and whatnot. So I think that's the way
to go.
Well,
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow it's interesting. Yeah, it shouldn't be, but it is interesting.
What?
It's very interesting. Hamilton, just the whole story.
Yeah,
it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre. Very bizarre.
Awesome.
Anyway, Mick, thank you so much for coming in.
No worries.
We've had
Thanks
so much fun doing this. This was
obviously the second, so we're going to continue with it next year, whether you like it or not.
I'm in.
On that note, Tom, thank you very much.
Pop, pop.